So are we ready?
Recording in progress.
Yes, Chair Martin, we are recording and broadcasting.
Very good. Thank you very much. Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the City of Aurora Grande Planning Commission meeting for Tuesday, October 19th. It is 6 o'clock. May we have a roll call, please?
Chair Martin?
Here.
Vice Chair Shiro?
Here.
Commissioner Buchanan?
Here.
Commissioner Guthrie?
Here.
And Commissioner Maravilla?
Here.
Very good. Thank you very much. Can we all please stand and follow Commissioner Guthrie in the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag
of the United States of America, the Republic for which it stands,
one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. I'm used to the echo there.
Very good. Thank you very much. Our agenda tonight is not very long, but is there any desire or request from my fellow commissioners to revise the order of the agenda? I'm seeing none, so we will continue on. Item five is the community comments and suggestions. This is the opportunity that we typically take at the beginning of each meeting to accept public comment for items that are not on the agenda, for opportunities for members of the community to present issues, thoughts, and suggestions that are not scheduled for discussion and decision tonight. Comments should be limited to those matters that are within the jurisdiction of the Planning Commission, and members of the public may provide comment remotely by joining the Zoom meeting utilizing one of the methods provided by the city. Please use the raise hand feature to indicate your desire to provide public comment, and now is the time to do that.
We do have one public commenter, Stu Enrico.
Very good. Mr. Enrico, you are online. It is your opportunity now. Welcome.
Oh, thank you kindly. If it suits the board, I also do have video available if you do want to see a person, or if you want to just go with a voice, that's fine as well.
It's entirely up to you. I appreciate having that, but that is a decision for you to make on your own. Thank you.
Okay, well, if I can be elevated to the video push, I'm quite happy to select that. I believe it requires the
yes. One moment while I switch you over.
Okay, thank you.
What, I'm on YouTube.
Go ahead, Stu.
Okay. And audio check, please.
Yes, we can hear you.
Wonderful. Good evening, commissioners. My name is Stuart Enrico. Thank you for this opportunity to speak with you. We first wanted to ensure that the Planning Commission were aware of the recent action from the City Council to create a prioritized agenda item calling for the city to thoroughly reevaluate the content of existing code, policies, and procedures surrounding vacation rental property applications and assessments in Rio Grande, along with the consideration of a moratorium on currently processing and future approvals. Further details are available on your request. We are requesting appropriate actions be taken at the Planning Commission level to help facilitate collaborative and timely support of this critical in-work activity. On a related matter, the only presently existing mechanism for a member of the public to have their voice and opinion heard on the important matter of a full-time vacation rental, which behaves very much like a motel, being made a part of and negatively changing their residential neighborhood, is to pay $491 to file an appeal on the associated PPR, plat plan review. Should the appellants need the city to assist with the required associated mailing labels, that costs an additional $406. This unreasonable financial burden can literally take food off the table and suppresses many families' access to due and appropriate process by imposing a significant cost barrier on a member of the public in order to be granted due process and to be heard. This is neither fair nor reasonable, and is another reason why vacation rental-related complaints exist, but are often not properly and clearly heard at the city level. We request a detailed review of this topic, along with waivers and/or refunds to be granted to those that have already outlaid appeal-associated funds relating to vacation rental PPRs in Arroyo Grande, to include ourselves in a recent appeal filing relating to PPR 21-029. That concludes my comments. Thank you again for the opportunity to speak at your meeting.
Thank you very much, Mr. Erico. I was certainly aware of that, and I'm confident that the other commissioners are certainly now aware of it. And we're going to look forward to working with the City Council as this continues to unfold. Thank you for your comments tonight.
Thank you kindly. If I can be of further assistance, please don't hesitate to reach out.
Very good. Thank you.
If any other member of the public would like to speak, please raise your hand now. Chair Martin, there are no more raised hands.
Very good. Thank you very much. With that one comment, I'm going to close the community comment period at this time, and we will continue on with our agenda. The next item on the agenda are written communications. I'm going to ask staff, were there any late received written communications or correspondence that are supplemental to the items that we're seeing here tonight that we are not already in possession of?
No, Chair Martin, there are no further written communications.
Very good, thank you. Item 7 is the consent agenda. There are two items on the consent agenda. One is the consideration of the approval of the minutes of our prior meeting of September 7th, 2021. And the second item is the consideration of lot line adjustment 21-002, located at 379 Corbett Canyon Road. The applicant is Joseph Weiss. The representative is Leonard Langer. Happy to entertain a motion for these two consent agenda items.
I'll move approval of the consent agenda.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
We have a motion and a second for the to approve the two consent agenda items. We have a roll call vote, please.
Commissioner Guthrie?
Yes.
Vice Chair Shiro?
Yes.
Commissioner Buchanan?
Yes.
Commissioner Maravilla?
Yes.
And Chair Martin?
Yes. Consent agenda is hereby approved. We have one public hearing item, the consideration of amended conditional use permit 21-001, installation of a backup generator and amendment of lease area at an existing telecommunication facility located at 581 Branch Mill Road. The applicant is T-Mobile Wireless with their representative J5 Infrastructure Partners. I'm assuming we have a brief staff report on this item.
Yes, thank you, Chair Martin.
Thank you, Mr. Perez.
Associate Planner Andrew Perez, I'll be providing a brief overview of the project right now. So the project is proposed for a site zone public facility. The site is home to a water tank that provides water to the city's residents. It's also known as Reservoir 4. The project site is accessed via a private drive known as Huebner Lane that takes access from Branch Mill Road. In addition to the water tank, this site is also home to three telecom sites for three different carriers. The existing entitlement that approved one of the cell sites was conditional use permit 03-004, which established a unmanned telecom site at the subject property that is currently operated by T-Mobile Wireless. That installation consisted of 8 panel antennas that are approximately 8 feet in height and an equipment shelter that powers that equipment on approximately 500 square feet of city property. The application submitted by the applicant proposes to add a backup generator to the existing site that would be operated by T-Mobile. The generator has the ability to support T-Mobile's equipment for up to 4 days in the event of emergency or other event that caused a power outage. No other alterations to the equipment are proposed under this application. So this project is before the Planning Commission this evening because Aurora Grande Municipal Code Section 16.16.050 states that when modifications to an approved conditional use permit are requested, the application shall be reviewed in the same manner as the original entitlement. The Planning Commission approved that original CUP, and the addition of a generator is considered an expansion of that use. Therefore, it needs approval from this commission. Pretty simple site plan. The existing equipment shelter is located just south of the water tank. The antennas are located actually on the water tank. And the new lease area that would accommodate the generator is just a little bit further south of the existing equipment shelter. In addition to the generator, there are some concrete bollards are proposed to protect it from any vehicle damage. This project was reviewed by the Staff Advisory Committee on October 6th. The discussion with the Staff Advisory Committee resulted in a couple of conditions that were added to the prepared resolution. One of those includes a maximum decibel output of 70 for the generator, and a condition that limits the use of the generator to events when power is interrupted and for regular maintenance. With those conditions, the SAC did recommend approval of the proposed project. The project wasn't reviewed in accordance with the California Environmental Quality Act and was determined to be exempt pursuant to section 15301 of the guidelines regarding existing facilities. And finally, members of the public were notified of tonight's hearing due to the public notice that was published in the Tribune, posted at City Hall and on the city's website, and property owners within 300 feet of the project site were also mailed a public hearing notice. Additionally, the agenda and staff report were posted in accordance with the government code, and no public comment has been received as of this evening's meeting. So in conclusion, it is recommended that the Planning Commission adopt the prepared resolution approving the proposed project. So I'd be happy to answer any questions at this time.
Very good, thank you very much. Are there any questions for staff from the commission? Seeing none, hearing nothing. I don't know if the representative of the applicant is here, if they have anything that they wish to add.
Yes, we do have the applicant here, Victor Flores. I think we can promote him to a panelist if he has anything to say.
I am promoting him now.
Thank you.
Hello. Good evening, everyone.
Good evening. Welcome.
Thank you, thank you. Thank you, Andrew. That was a good presentation. I don't have any comments. It's just a generator, but I'm open to any questions from the panel.
Thank you very much, Mr. Flores. Are there any questions for the applicant from the commission? From my standpoint, this seems like a fairly simple addition and upgrade, and probably just a modernization effort of some kind on the project. Seeing none, I'm going to bring it back to any kind of final comments, and if there are no comments, to entertain a motion to approve item 8A.
I'll make a motion the Planning Commission adopt the resolution approving amended conditional use permit 21-001.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
Okay. We have a motion and a second to approve the amended conditional use permit 21-001. May we have a roll call, please?
Vice Chair Shiro?
Yes.
Commissioner Maravilla?
Yes.
Commissioner Buchanan?
Yes.
Commissioner Guthrie?
Yes.
And Chair Martin?
Yes. This motion passes 5-0. The public hearing items are now completed. We do have a single non-public hearing item, and it's a project update of a local roadway safety plan. Kind of a long document we were able to get late last week. Mr. Perez, would you like to give us a brief update and an orientation on this item, please?
Thank you, Chair Martin. Brian Pedrotti, Community Development Director. There we go.
Anyway, I wasn't sure. Suddenly, Robert Dickerson came on, and you came on, Brian, so I wasn't sure.
That's okay. I was just going to introduce Robin, so she can take it from here. Thanks.
Very good. Thank you. Ms. Dickerson, you're welcome.
Thank you, Chair Martin and Commissioners. Bear with me while I share my screen so you can see the PowerPoint presentation. Are you able to see the PowerPoint?
I can see it on my screen. I see about 1/4 of it for whatever reason, and maybe because I have a smaller monitor or whatever, but it is visible.
There you go.
Now it's much better on my screen now. Thank you very
much. Better. Okay, you have before you tonight a project update regarding the local road safety program. This is a program that we are planning to take to council, and we thought it might be a good idea to bring it forward to the Planning Commission. One, just to give you guys some insights of what we're looking at and what we're trying to do, and to help understand where we are in a process. So we've got the local road safety program tonight. So we're going to discuss the background, the safety partners and the stakeholder group that was formed to put this plan together. This was not just done by staff, but by several other agencies, neighboring agencies. We took a look at collision data and did some analysis. And originally the analysis was done from 2014 to 2018, but because of where we were in the time frame, we added years 19 and 20. We did do some public outreach, so we do have comments from the public as far as where safety concerns are, and that was all part of putting this final document together. We'll discuss some upcoming and projects that have already been completed to help with the safety issues. And then we're going to look at, talk about some recommendations, and then we're going to end with questions. So just to give you a little bit of background, the Local Road Safety Program is about the third document that we have been preparing. It started with the circulation element update. Then we moved on to the systemic safety analysis report that was done. And during the SARP, we were told by Caltrans that in cycle 11, which is going to be in 2022, all future HSIP funding is going to require an approved local road safety program. So we elected, while we were doing the SARP, we figured it would probably be cheaper, and it was, to use the same consultant and just continue on with the data. So they were able to use the SARP data and then fill in what we needed to for the local road safety program without having to go back out and reinvent the data that was just recently analyzed for the SARP. So that's what brings us here today. So the local road safety program starts with the Department of Transportation and then looks at the strategic highway safety plan that was been adopted by Caltrans. And then each agency from the requirements of the federal and state agency prepares what they call a local road safety plan. The difference between the SARP and the local road safety program is the SARP just looked at collision data. It didn't care anything else about the community. It just looked at collision data. And what it does is it takes these high risk areas and you do a basic calculation to determine your benefit cost ratio. And you come up with projects that could be future funded if your cost, if your benefit cost ratio is high enough. Unfortunately, in our little city of Arroyo Grande, we do have accidents, but compared to a lot of other places within the state of California, they aren't, we don't rank high enough with the cost to benefit ratio for the most part. So the thing about the local road safety plan is it not only looks at your collision data, but it also looks at some of the other issues that are represented in the community and the safety. And it's not just collisions, but it's bikes, it's pedestrians, it's other multimodal transportation types, so that you're starting to bring everything together. So the LRSP overall process, you establish a leadership group, which we did. Then you analyze the safety data, determine your emphasis areas, identify strategies, prioritize and incorporate strategies, and evaluate and update. So one of the unique things about the local road safety program is we step away from the traditional approach and we are looking at something called Vision Zero. And what that does is it moves away from traffic deaths being inevitable to traffic deaths are preventable. It also looks at perfect human, it moves from perfect human behavior to integrating human failures in your approach. It also, your traditional approach would look at preventing collisions. Here, we're going to look at preventing fatal and severe injury collisions. Under the traditional approach, it's usually the individual's responsibility to prevent a crash. Here, we're going to look at a system and putting things in place as a community to make it safer for the residents. And then the last bullet would be under the traditional, saving lives is expensive. In this case, under Vision Zero, saving lives is not expensive. It's just something we all need to do. So the first thing we did was we created a vision, a mission statement, and goals. And the vision statement is Arroyo Grande will develop a comprehensive safety plan with engagement of stakeholders and citizens that encourage improvement, safety for all users, regardless of age or ability, whether it is walking, biking, rolling, and driving, because every person in our community matters. And then we looked at developing 12 goals. And we initially started out with your typical goals of reducing crashes and stuff at a certain percentage. But we've only had, on average, one or two collisions a year. So if we can reduce it by one collision, we're over 50%. If we can get it down, and last year, and I don't know whether it was the benefit of COVID, but we were down at zero collisions or zero fatalities last year. So we're making some progress. Maybe it was just the luck of having COVID and people not being out and about. But we're going to continue to strive to keep that zero as far as fatalities go. So we'll see how we progress as time goes on. Then we developed a stakeholders working group, and we took members from all the various departments in the city of Arroyo Grande. We were able to get Caltrans involved. And then because Arroyo Grande is surrounded by several other agencies and municipalities, we wanted to make sure that we had cohesiveness at our boundaries. So we also brought in the city of Grover Beach, the city of Pismo Beach, Lucia Mar Unified School District, and then we looked at the two bike clubs, the San Luis Obispo Bike Club and the Bike Slow County Bike Club. So we had all those members sitting on our stakeholders group. And that stakeholders group met four times. We met in person twice prior to COVID. Then things sort of got delayed and postponed because we kept hoping that we were going to come out of this COVID thing so that we could start having in-person meetings again. That never happened. So we elected to have the last two meetings were Zoom meetings, but we were getting participation from all of the stakeholders. So we prepared a collision analysis map. And from here, you can see where some of the hot spots are within the city. And it appears that Grand Avenue is one of the major hot spots. So those are some of the areas that we're going to be looking at as we move forward in time. We received public input. We, because of COVID, we were not able to have a community meeting like we typically have in the past. So our consultant was able to put together a map, an interactive map on our website that allowed people to go in and make comments. And we had several comments regarding biking, speeding, and pedestrians. So then we look at what projects have been implemented and planned to help reduce some of the issues that we're having. And one of the things that has helped the pedestrian fatalities there on Branch is the flashing pedestrian crossing signs when people are willing to push the button. So those seem to be very effective. I know just from personal experience, when you're going west on Branch in the evening as the sun is setting, even though you're pretty much blinded by the sun, those flashing pedestrian signs make a big difference. For some reason, those things shine brighter than the sun. So we're in hopes of being able to install some more. As you'll see, we do have some future HCIP projects that are going to look at putting those at some existing crosswalks. The intersection of the Pike and South Halcyon was converted from a two-way stop to a full stop. So that has helped slow some of the traffic. And hopefully it is helping the pedestrians trying to cross that road. One of the other major things that has been done in the last year or so is one of the developers installed the traffic signal at Traffic Way. And it's actually at Traffic Way and Fair Oaks, but it has significantly helped with some of the issues we were having on Allen and Traffic Way. So it also improved signage, and everything was restriped in that intersection. So it's made that a lot better. And this is one of the first traffic signals that is fully ADA compliant. It's got, I don't know if you've all used it, but it's got the little pedestrian push pad that will actually talk to you and let you know when it's safe to cross. So that was recently installed. And then we've got some coordination underway for the relocation of the bus loading zones on Belly adjacent to the high school. A few months ago, I met out there with the school district and the bus manager. And we were trying to figure out how to clear up some of the stuff that was happening on Valley. And the bus manager made some comment about what I'd really like to do is be able to load in the back of the school. Well, with the addition of Castillo del Mar Extension, that has made that possible. So the one parking lot that's adjacent to the softball fields is actually now become their bus loading and unloading zone and is working very well for them. So once we get Castillo del Mar Extension completed and opened up, we're going to take a look at what we can do on Valley to clear up some of the confusion as you come into that, especially with the bike lane that's there, making it a little more clear for how we get bikes through that intersection as you head towards Valley. So that's something that's in process. And as Castillo del Mar Extension gets completed, we're going to be taking a look at that. We were fortunate with the HCIP Cycle 10 that was done in 2020 to be awarded to do three improvements. We're going to be doing an improvement there on Grand Avenue near the theater where the existing crosswalk is. And we're going to be adding rapid flashing beacons at that point. And we're going to clean that up a little bit to make it easier for people. We're going to be adding some ADA ramps so that people can get through that intersection a lot easier. We're also going to be looking at doing some stuff at the intersection of Farrell and Halcyon. And we're going to be looking at upgrading the crosswalk at Sandalwood and Halcyon. And those are all part of the HCIP Cycle 10 money that the city was awarded. And then the report goes on to make several more recommendations on different things to look at. We're going to be looking at areas where there are concerns of speeding and what we might be able to do. We've been meeting currently with some of the specific residents of those areas, two of them being Tally Ho and Sunset, and trying to find, one, what the residents want, what we're capable of doing under the current requirements that we have, and how to make it all come together. It's like everything else, everything takes money. And if it's not in the budget, we've got to figure out how to make it happen or get it into the budget. So before you tonight is the final local road safety plan that we will be going to council with. It's going to track metrics for the various established goals that we have. It's going to be a plan that's a living document, and it's going to need to be updated, especially no less than every 5 years, because traffic changes, collision issues happen. So we want to keep an eye on that, and we want to make sure that this document is reflecting the issues that we're currently seeing in the city. And then it's also going to take a look at what funding opportunities we may be able to get into. And with that, I'm willing to answer any questions that you might have.
Thank you very much, Robin. I'd like to make a specific thank you to you, your staff under GHC, for the thorough work that was obviously done. From my perspective, this is an example of the level of detail that Sacramento requires of cities for funding and for updating stuff. And I know it presents specific challenges, financial and otherwise, to small communities like Aurora Grande. But pretty thorough work and pretty well done. I know it's taking a lot of time. I have a couple of very quick, easy questions. I'll turn it over to my fellow commissioners. The stakeholders group, was this an Aurora Grande focused and managed group? This wasn't a regional group that we were just a participant of. Is that correct? This is an Aurora Grande focused group?
It was a group that Aurora Grande put together specifically for our local road safety program.
Okay. Now, are you aware that I'm assuming if the other communities like Pismo and Grover were involved in a similar process, were we invited to participate with them in their process?
I don't know whether Grover has done anything. I do know that Pismo did, and although they didn't put together a stakeholders group like we did, that I was aware of, we were requested to review their plan.
Interesting. Very good. Thank you. And this is more on a personal note, because this is where I walk in the morning. It looks to me like Castillo del Mar is very, very close to completion. Obviously, that will facilitate traffic coming off of those houses up there behind the high school. How close is that?
It's very close. The unfortunate part is we did run into an issue because of some of the COVID-related things in getting the pedestrian flashing signs. They've been on order for many, many months now. And for some reason, we're having problems with the company that we are trying to buy them from. We've already paid for the signs, or at least our contractor has paid for the signs. We can't seem to get them to return phone calls. So we're trying to figure out what to do there. My biggest concern, because that's going to be a new road, it's going to be a pretty opened road. I don't want pedestrians being hit without those pedestrian signs. So we're looking at trying to find another manufacturer that we might be able to use. We were trying to stay consistent with what's in the village, but if you've got a supplier that's just not producing. So we're in the process of trying to figure out how long before we can get that road open. But right now, my biggest concern is we have a pedestrian crossing behind the school, and right, it's unprotected.
Right. Clearly understood. Sitting in a sea train off the Port of Long Beach.
More than likely.
Very good. Those are the questions that I have. Are there other questions for staff, for Ms. Dickerson, from the other members of the commission? Ms. Maravilli, do you have any questions?
I just kind of had a basic question. You talked about like the cycles. When does the next cycle begin, and how long is each cycle of funding last, I guess?
It's a 2-year cycle. And the last one was in 2020. And then we were awarded in early 2021. And then by the time you get all the contracts and everything with Caltrans taken care of, you can then go out to design. We're in the process of going out to design on the 3 projects we just were awarded. The next cycle, we're expecting to start in 2022. So it happens every 2 years.
Thank you. That was my only question.
Mr. Shiro, you have questions for staff?
I have a couple, yes. Robin, just thinking in terms of just what I've seen, it's super detailed. But I wanted to know if there was, is there a risk factor ratio for pedestrian issues, i.e. fatalities, hits, you know, severe injuries, based, are intersections graded based on how many people cross the street? In other words, I see that we've got somebody who's hit here, somebody who's hit here, somebody who's hit here. And it seems to me like somewhere in that factor, figuring out, okay, what do we do next? There needs to be a factor of, well, there's been two people hit, but there's also 800 people crossing at this intersection every day. But over here, there was maybe one or even two people hit, but there's only seven people crossing a week. So how is that factored in?
Under the actual SARP, that's really not factored in, because you take a look at the fatalities and you take a look at the collisions and you take a look at the costs associated with those. And it doesn't matter. It only matters at the number. And that's the difference between the local road safety program and the SARP. The SARP is only interested in what the data shows. The local road safety program gives you that opportunity to take a look and, based on community input and based on what you're seeing within the community, is that a highly traveled area? Is it not a highly traveled area? Where do we want to put our time and effort? And that's sort of what the local road safety program allows you to do compared to the SARP itself.
Got it. So you guys took that into consideration yourself, knowing the local roads, knowing that, you know, an intersection like, on East Branch, in front of Branch Street Deli and Rooster Creek, obviously huge numbers crossing through there, needs more attention than typically maybe someplace else where there was one accident or one where nobody's crossing or very few people are crossing.
Right, right. So no, the local road safety plan allows you to look at that, and it allows you to take input from the community too, as far as where are their concerns and are a number of them using that? Is it really worth somebody's time?
Right. Okay. I guess my second question, and you mentioned it regarding you're absolutely right. As far as flashing, when those flashers were changed, I believe, was it in 2019, late 2019?
It was either late 2019, early 2020.
Right. That definitely made a difference from people being able to see that somebody is in that crosswalk. And so that was a great addition, that when they're vertical and they're higher, much better than just the little LEDs in the street that would get dim with grease. And so that's made a huge difference. One thing that hasn't changed is, I would say the stubbornness of drivers that see it, but no people are in the crosswalk, but decide that they're going to win the race through the crosswalk with the pedestrian. I've still seen that. That's chronic with as many times as I cross through there. So to me, that's a question of enforcement. And it's one thing that I love our police, and I don't want to make this sound negative, but it's one thing that I think in that area I would venture to say that if a motorcycle police officer stayed on that intersection in 4 hours, that their hands would start cramping with how many tickets they'd be writing for people going through, even though those lights are flashing, from trucks to, you know, to individual cars. So that would be one of my, I don't know how that gets recommended for special attention or for any of these intersections that have flashers. There's two things. Okay, I saw that somebody's crossing. Now I'm going to make the decision to break the law and even potentially speed up through the intersection, through that crosswalk. That's something that I've seen as being a chronic problem. And I would love it if we would enforce that more.
One of the good things I can tell you is we've only got one motorcycle cop, and he can't be everywhere at one time. The good news is we have a second motorcycle cop that is in the final processes of being certified, at which time we might be able to get more patrol, because that was one of the recommendations under enforcement in the local road safety program, is that we need to be able to have more enforcement. So with the addition of the second motorcycle cop, we're in hopes that we might be able to see some more enforcement because one person can't do it all.
That's great. And and you said the numbers that we're looking at for these studies and the accidents, that they're through 2019 or?
2020.
2020. Okay, so I just have to say this just because the intersection that we were speaking of earlier on East Branch, that it shows as one fatality. There's actually been two fatalities. The one that's severely injured was Jim Smith. He was Jude Genova passed away from his injuries in that in 2015 or 16, I believe. In 2019, Jim Smith passed away. That was a graduation night, but he died 6 to 8 weeks later. So I don't know if that affects. It sounds like the way that this works, it counts fatalities by millions of dollars or, in the EEPO method. So I just wanted to clarify that. I know the family would probably want to clarify it too.
Okay. Well, the unfortunate part is when we look at this data, we take it from a police report. And a lot of times the report may not be updated to show it as a death.
Right.
So unfortunately, we don't see it that way. But the fact that we are seeing people get hit, that is also taken into consideration.
Okay. All right. Let's see. Oh, one other thing. So on Grace Lane, I know the residents there have been asking for speed bumps for a long time, but since it's a collector, they can't get a collector, can't get speed bumps on a collector because that's where our fire trucks get to their calls. Is there any remedy for them as far as enforcement? Because I do walk on that street quite a bit, and it is 50, sometimes 50 to 60 miles an hour for cars.
Well, and that's what we've found. One of the things, the police department received a grant, and we invested in a data collector device that we can put out on a street for a whole week, and it will collect data 24/7. And we've actually been using that, and it has been very helpful, one, to pinpoint what times enforcement needs to happen, because it shows us, we can send an officer out, but if that's not the time people are speeding, it doesn't do any good. But with this data collector, we're able to pinpoint the time zones where the speeding is occurring. One of the other interesting things that we saw with the data collection is tally-ho, people that are coming into town and traveling west are traveling at significantly higher speeds than those traveling out of town, traveling east. So we're looking at trying to do something there to deter those. And one of my biggest concerns is, as you come off 227, you've got that giant sweeping radius.
Right.
And there's really no reason for anybody to slow down as you come into that residential area physically. So what we're going to start looking at is maybe some options to get people to slow down if they're going to come into that residential area.
Okay. All right. Those are all my questions. Thank you.
And Mr. Sharma, Mr. Buchanan, you have questions for staff?
Yes, I do. Let me get my questions pulled up. I have quite a list of feedback here. I'll just address the point of questions to start and hold my comments for later. Let me find my place here. Oh, so we mentioned, I think in the stakeholders, part of the list was Bike Slow County. Did they actually end up participating in the meetings on this?
Yes. Yeah, we had two representatives, and we had Ken Price.
Okay. And then there is, I had a bit of a hard time parsing out like what our strategies and lists of planned projects are here. There's a section 9 implementation process that mentions additional projects, Appendix C, SSAR priority projects. Are those intended to be in addition to any list of projects here? Like we have some example projects in Table 8.1.
Yes.
Is that a separate set of projects?
They would be in addition. They're with the SARP, there were a certain number of projects that were done where we do have a good benefit to cost ratio to look at doing some additional projects. And that's strictly on the fact that we've had a lot of collisions and the fact that we do have a benefit cost ratio that can be supported by the grant. So this next round of grants, we're hoping that we can bring some of those projects forward.
Okay, so it's Table 8.1 plus that, and then we have 8.1.1, which is other recommended projects. Is there a reason this isn't rolled into the table above or the other list? I'm trying to get a grasp on what all is being recommended here.
I believe Table 8.1 are the projects that we're going to initially focus on based on what's come out of the local road safety program. And then the other recommended city projects are some areas where we believe crossings don't exist. There's something out there called the Hawk. I don't know how familiar you guys are with that.
Yeah, I know what that is.
But there's some areas where we think we need some crosswalks just because we have a lot of people just crossing blocks just anywhere. And what we'd like to do is focus on getting them in a safe area where they can cross safely. And one of the things we would like to do with some of those projects under 8.1.1 is take a look and maybe see if a Hawk might be something. We want to try it and see if it's something that people like, they don't like, and whether or not it creates safety, because these are areas that people have come to us and said, we need a crosswalk. We're worried about our kids. People try to cross all the time, but the speeds are high on these streets. So we're trying to find ways to, because we do want people walking. And if you're not going to provide them a way to cross, they're going to cross anyhow. And I'd rather see them cross in a protected way as opposed to just crossing the street wherever it feels good. Because that may
not be. Okay. Yeah, so that's a good segue into my next question. Our common constraint here is budget usually. I'm curious if we had any thought around adding a strategy around introducing more quick build type projects here, quick build infrastructure to get more feedback, like you just mentioned, standing up a temporary quick build project for a crosswalk or a protected intersection or protected bike lane that doesn't require the budget that would typically be the constraint, can allow us to gather some feedbacks from residents and also potentially address some of our strategy here in the LRSP. Was that a consideration here? Is that something that should be added here to explore quick build infrastructure?
We're looking at some of that. We're proposing some of that exact idea out on Tally Ho, where it involves some striping. We're currently working with a striper at the moment to get a proposal to do striping, not only on Tally Ho, but several of the other streets. Because at the intersection of Grand and Halcyon, it takes a weird turn as you go through the intersection. So we're gonna try to do something with the striping out there. It's just striping. And we're hoping that this is going to be a easy or quick build, as you call it, option to get some safety out there without having to redirect drainage and build curb gutter and sidewalk and some of that stuff. So we are trying to do some of that with the striping refresh program that we're currently trying to get a proposal on. Unfortunately, okay, most of the striping contractors right now are extremely busy, and we're not having a whole lot of luck getting a response.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, the way I've seen this work successfully in some cities is typically not done by contractors, but by some sort of community group that can do this at an even lower cost than a contractor could, which is why I, I'll leave that for my comments later, but I'd like to, ideally would be nice to have some codified quick build plan or process as part of this, but I'll move on from that question. My final question here was whether any changes regarding AB 43 speed limits for safety law that was just signed in to law should be incorporated here, or whether that was considered to be incorporating here for maybe lowering speed limits in critical places like school zones, or, you know, talk about the village or any other highly trafficked areas.
Right now I'm working with the police department to find out, to help figure out what all the ramifications are of AB 43. My understanding of AB 43 is nothing can happen until, what is it, June 30th, 2024, unless the jurisdictional council puts something in place so that people have something online. So we're trying to figure out what that means. And that will affect a lot of different things. We have a speed survey that's supposed to happen every 5 years. The next speed survey is 2023. But depending on when this thing actually comes into play, it may not happen until sometime after June 30th, 2024.
Okay, but it seems like there is some potential to add some language around potentially lowering speed limits for safety reasons, which is a thing we couldn't previously do.
Right, right. It's going to give the agencies a lot more flexibility. Right now, we're trying to wrap our arms around what does that really mean and what flexibility we have. So.
Sure, yeah. So right now it's a vague goal, but it is nonetheless could potentially be a goal.
Yes, yes. And okay. I'm sure that in and of itself is probably going to come before either the Planning Commission or Council at some time, because I see that becoming part of a future ordinance or some sort of regulation, whether it's in the engineering standards or something. So once we get it figured out, and I'm going to be working with the police department so that we're both on the same page doing the same thing.
Okay. Thank you. I don't have any other questions.
Lieutenant, Mr. Guthrie, you have questions for staff on this?
Yeah, I do have a few. So for this, just informational, when we have a group who can, like GHD, that collects data for us, do we own the data?
Yes.
Is it something? Okay, so if later on we want to use this data for some other study, it's still available to us. It's not like GHD only has it on their servers and not us.
Right. No, when everything's completed, we'll get a full download of all the data and stuff.
Okay. And then on the other jurisdictions, did I understand that Pismo did this same report? Or did they just do some other process?
They did a similar one. I believe they did have a working group, but it was strictly more PISMA oriented.
Oh, no, I understand that. I'm wondering if it was the same LSRP versus an SRP or LS.
It might have been I can't remember offhand, but I do know they did something, and it was either the SARP or the Local Road Safety Program. I think as far as agencies here go, we were probably one of the first ones to the table. And that was because we wanted to take and use the information we were collecting from the SARP and move directly into the Local Road Safety Program so that we didn't risk losing funding in the future.
Okay. And then I thought I knew what a hawk was, and I just want to be sure I'm clear. So I thought a hawk was like what we have at Station Way and Fair Oaks, the flashing light from either sidewalk. Is that what a hawk is?
No.
Okay.
A hawk is what I would classify as a dormant traffic light that only comes on when a pedestrian wants to cross.
Okay.
And then it goes into this flashing red mode where nobody's supposed to enter the crosswalks except for the pedestrians crossing.
Okay. So the pedestrian crossings that we're planning at Cameron and Bell noted that they were going to have, I thought said that they were going to have a hawk associated with them. Is that in addition to a flashing light like we have at Fair Oaks and Station Way?
It'll be really a dormant traffic signal that lets people know when pedestrians are crossing. Once they hit the button, it then wakes it up, and then it goes through the process of allowing people to cross and stopping traffic in both directions.
So is it similar to what we have in the village there, except that it's red?
No, it is an actual light, traffic light.
Okay.
It's almost like a railroad crossing.
Okay. And is it going to sit in the middle of the road, or is it just on each side?
It'll be on each side but it'll have an overhead arm that extends out.
So this would be like they have in Grover Beach on 4th Street?
I'm not familiar with that one, but...
Okay. And maybe that answers this. So in the village, you're proposing putting up an actual, at least I thought I read it this way, an actual refuge spot in the center of the road so that people could go halfway across and still be protected. I'm wondering why we didn't use a similar thing. I sort of understand at Bell because there's the way the roads align there. But I'm a little bit surprised that we didn't use something like that at Alder Street, where you have I think 110-foot crossing, and you already have channelized traffic on the east side of that intersection. I will tell you from walking across it, that's a long way across. I don't think anybody crosses there without running. So I'm wondering why we wouldn't use a similar treatment there to what we're using in the village on a much narrower street.
It's one of those things. I think we're looking more and more at a raised median as a pedestrian stop between the two traffic lanes on these wider streets. But with that, it comes really some design and some consideration. We're also looking at maybe possibly doing something further up with the Paulding School to allow the kids to cross Branch Street safely.
Other than the overhead walkway that's
there.
Okay. Okay, so the crosswalk that you're using on Castillo del Mar is like the village, it doesn't have the little flashers in the road. It has the big flashers on either side.
Right. Yeah. What we wanted to do is use the pedestrian sign that has the lights around the perimeter. And that's what we've got on order. It just has not arrived yet.
Okay. So not the in-road ones that cost $35,000 to fix the bulb.
Well, and that's the problem. The in-road ones, they're hit and miss whether they work. It doesn't take a whole lot of dirt and dust to cause issues, and they become a maintenance nightmare, and they're very highly expensive to replace and repair.
Okay. And then I kind of wanted to go through a couple of things that you and I talked about this afternoon, just so it's in there. So I'm looking at page 39 of the staff report, 27 of the LRSP. And so these are the intersections. And as we discussed, there's a lot of things here that are listed as countermeasures, but they're already in place. But this is, I'm going to say most of these are like boilerplate. It's the same thing on every single intersection. Now, I'm wondering which of these kinds of items are actually going to be new as opposed to just updated versions. You and I talked about the a pedestrian crossing. It's already got a crosswalk, but there are other kinds of crosswalks and those kinds of things. So I wonder which of these things we're not already doing, like it has improved signal timing, plate mounting on the improve the signal hardware, leading pedestrian intervals, provide pedestrian crossings. It just strikes me that a lot of these countermeasures are actually things we're already doing.
Well, we're not like the leading pedestrian interval. We're not doing that. And that is something that they've started doing up in San Luis. And that's something that I would like to look at doing down here. Do you understand what the leading pedestrian interval is?
I'm gonna guess that they stop the traffic before they let the pedestrians walk, but I could be wrong.
Well, basically that's what it is. What it does is before you allow people to make turns or enter the intersection, you allow traffic or pedestrians to start ahead of those turning movements and stuff so that they can clear before people try to make those movements. So it gives them a little bit more lead time in trying to get across some of the intersections.
Yeah, I can see where especially the right-hand turners are not looking at you when you step in the road there.
Right.
Okay, and then on two pages before, this were the descriptions of the road segments. Again, this is something we talked about earlier. So I wonder if you go into the Allen Street where you're talking about removing the parking from one side to because of the I guess three cars or whatever was struck there, and also the description of what you're actually planning to do at Bridge Street. I wonder if you could expand on that.
Allen, right now we need to hold a community meeting for that street to get people's input on one, whether or not they're willing to lose parking. My guess, based on the homes and stuff that are out there and the limited amount of space within the driveways themselves, that people are not going to be receptive to losing parking. The types of accidents that are occurring on Allen are fairly high. And they're side swipes, and they're caused by not having enough room in the street itself for two lanes of traffic and parking on both sides of the street.
Okay, I don't have it in front of me, but I thought I read that there was actually three accidents on Allen Street. That doesn't feel fairly high to me. Maybe I misread it, but.
Well, there's that, but one of the things that's actually improved with the addition of the traffic signal out there at Fair Oaks and Traffic Way is people that are trying to exit out of Allen onto Traffic Way have a little bit better timing because people are slowing down for the traffic signal.
Right. I understand that. That was covered in the intersection, not the road segment. But the road segment is sideswiping cars.
Yeah.
And as I read it, it was only three accidents, but because there's so little traffic, it elevated all the way to the most dangerous street in Rio Grande, I think. But okay, and then so your plan there is to eliminate parking in order to.
Well, we may or may not. That's an option. We want buy-in from the community in that area. I don't want to just go out there and say, oh, you can't park here tomorrow. Sorry. And then try to do something else without getting the community to weigh in on it. Absolutely. So, I mean, we've talked possibly about going to a one-way street. We've looked at some different things. Not sure what we're going to do, but we want to have that discussion with the community before we make any decisions.
Okay. And then could you go at the Bridge Street is identified as a quote, there's a wide Bridge Street widening plan, but I don't think that's quite description of what you're planning. I wonder if you go through that as well.
Not really a widening plan. There is that post office box that sort of sits there in the middle of a median area. And it takes right as you take traffic off of Traffic Way onto Bridge Street, if you've got people dropping mail off, some of them stop and let traffic go through. Others don't even look. They just sort of peel out. So what we're looking at trying to do is reduce those conflicts.
And you mentioned also that you're thinking of having that segment at least be a one-way street as well.
And we're looking at possibly going to a one-way street because it's an extremely narrow street. You get people with the bigger trucks and pulling fifth wheel trailers trying to come down there, and you're trying to pass and you've got parking on both sides of the street. Doesn't leave a whole lot of room to be able to get through.
Okay.
So we're gonna be looking at that. And I mean, there's been no definite decision. It's just we're putting options out there. We're trying to figure out what people want, what people don't want. We seem to not, at least the feedback we're getting, nobody's really married to the mailbox out there. We haven't talked to the post office yet, but that'll be a future discussion.
I'm sure they would love to have one less box to service. All right. Thank you. Those are my questions.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Guthrie. This is not technically a public hearing item, but I'm wondering if there's anyone from the public who's been listening into this that would like an opportunity to speak on this item or share an opinion. To my administrator who helps handle this part of the meeting, is there anybody out there in the public that we're aware of that would like to speak on this item?
If anyone from the public would like to speak, please raise your hand. Chair Martin, there are no raised hands.
Very good. Just want to give people an opportunity, as awkward as it is with these remote meetings, to give people an opportunity to speak while we are actively discussing this item. Bring it back to the commission here, Ms. Buchanan, it sounds like you have some other comments that you would like to make. I know there's no vote of any kind that we're expected to take. Mr. Federati, is there any other more formalized discussion or decision that we're expected to make? Or can we just give our kind of closing comments and then hand it back to staff as they make their preparations to present this to the city council?
Yeah, I think that's appropriate. You said it succinctly, I think. We're looking for comments and as we move forward to the city council.
Very good. Mr. Buchanan, I'm going to let you lead on this. You sound like you specifically have some comments you would like to make.
Yeah, thanks. So I think there's two general sides to my feedback. Like I said, I had a hard time parsing, like, what is the plan here and what is background and what is data? I think some of this is just related to some of like the way the prose and the document is structured. So I'll save, like, I've written feedback on that I can share with staff that can hopefully improve the clarity of some of this. Like, just for example, the executive summary kicks off, the project involves the development of a local roadway safety plan. But as far as I can tell, this is a local roadway safety plan. So there's some confusing language like that I think can be cleared up just so it's clear for everyone involved later on down the line. Then to talk about the purpose and the need, section 2.1, page 2, it mostly centers around fatal and severe injuries, but there's also goals related to providing, you know, safety for all road users, which maybe could be better addressed here. There's the old bridge example where, you know, we don't build a bridge because we see people, you know, swimming and struggling to swim across the river. You build a bridge because it's a place people need to get to. I think moving on to section 2.2.2, the vision and the mission statement, this kind of gets at the same idea. I'm no expert on meaning of the terms vision and mission statement, but from what I've seen from other LRSPs and know about the terms generally, the vision is probably more closely related. I think the mission statement is actually our vision here. The vision of developing a LRSP isn't really what the LRSP is trying to accomplish. It's trying to accomplish
implementing a roadway that's safe for all users. To take an example of one other LRSP that I looked at, the vision is actually the city roadway system is free of major injuries and fatalities and promotes safe and easy mobility through the use of multiple transportation modes. So that's the envision here. The mission statement is to reduce the number of fatalities and serious injuries occurring in the city roadway system for all modes of travel to facilitate the safe and efficient movement of people and goods while promoting walking, encouraging biking, and supporting a comprehensive and integrated transit system. So I think we generally have like a good vision in the mission statement section, but that's probably actually the vision, and the mission statement is more around how we're going to accomplish that. Dropping down to, I think my question is answered. A lot of my comments were around, again, the structure, but I can document this better and send it to staff in writing around figuring out what is the prioritized list of projects here, what are the strategies. It's kind of scattered around in a number of different sections now, and it made it hard to give feedback on the substantive strategies and goals when it was hard to track those down. I think I have a better concept of it now, but again, some of this is better shared over writing. Let's see, I have a couple more things here. So one minor thing on section 8.3, there's this thing, 8.3.2, bicycle and video detection. My note here is that I just don't know what that is. I don't know what bicycle and video detection is. So if we could add some clarification to that. And then I got my question answered around the SSAR priority projects. So the rest of my comments are mostly around the goals and section 10 evaluation process. Again, because of the trouble I had digesting this, I think these are the core goals of the LRSP. For one, we talked about SMART goals earlier on in the document, but these goals don't appear to be time constrained unless it's implicitly like 5 years when we plan to revisit this. Then goal 3, I thought was a bit poorly worded. It says bicycle and pedestrian collisions. It sounds like we're talking about collisions between bikes and pedestrians, but I think we're talking about cars hitting people walking or people biking. And then goal 5, I'd really like to see more detail around what safety around schools looks like. I think there's some more general gesture towards that in some other sections, but nothing really talks much about protected intersections or protected bike lanes or speed tables or what features we're trying to add to potentially accomplish that. I think there's probably standard features that should be mentioned here if we really want to take goal 5 seriously for safety around schools. And then generally in all of those goals, anything that talks about bikes or pedestrian infrastructure, there's really no mention of more specifics there around maybe striving for protected bike lanes where possible, protected intersections for pedestrians, like I mentioned, protected left turn lanes for cars, but we're not talking about protected infrastructure for pedestrians or bike lanes or bicyclists. If we don't have that, I'm really not sure how we meet goals around increasing walking and biking to downtown districts or schools. Just for disclosure, I'm someone who bikes around almost every trip in town, but I don't recommend anyone bike around town if they ask me, because there is no protected infrastructure for those that are less experienced. I'm not sure I would recommend my own kids to bike to school on many routes. So unless that is more called out more explicitly here, I'm not really sure how we accomplish those goals without that protected infrastructure. And then, around AB 43 and speed limits for safety, like I mentioned, it'd be nice to have some mention of that in here so that we know that that is a tool at our disposal, lowering speed limits for safety when it becomes available. And then also, again, like I mentioned, having some mention of exploring quick build solutions or quick build infrastructure process to gain that temporary iterative feedback loop between trying something, temporary quick build, getting feedback, seeing if it works or not, and avoiding that long-term budget constraint that we typically have with any project in town. And then finally, the next steps in section 11, it just says it will be updated as needed and the goals will be monitored, but it doesn't say, how you're going to determine when it's needed or who's going to be monitoring the goals. So just having a little bit more detail and clarity around that would be great. Those are my general comments. Like I said, I'll share some specific structural throws related things with staff in writing. Thanks.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Buchanan. Mr. Shiro, do you have anything you'd like to comment or add at this point?
Yeah. The process that we got feedback from people, from our citizens, until I read this, I didn't know that we could go on our city website and we had a place that if you had a problem in your neighborhood, you could mark an intersection and say, this is going on. So I think maybe if there's a way to increase that knowledge to people, that kind of like what we're doing with redistricting, maybe that's I've been talking to some people just today and they're like, no, I didn't know you could do that. I've got there's people, my neighbors, I want to talk about this, and everybody's got places they go all the time. I can go through a bunch of really specific stuff right now in the village, and things that I think could be addressed in a specific way. But I'm not a traffic engineer, and I'm not an expert, but I do know that when somebody travels in a certain area and they see problems over and over and over and the same problems, they're an expert from what they've experienced in that little area. So the more that we can get draw those real world observations, I think the better information that Robin, you have to make, say, hey, that's obviously a problem, but I've got a solution for it. So that's just an overall, maybe something that we can do better. Overall, I think enforcement is one of those issues in some of our areas that could take, that could really make a difference. And then there's some areas where I think it's obvious that there's a structural issue that we need to change the way people are crossing the street, or the way people are notified that someone's crossing the street, or et cetera. So I like the fact that this has a multi, it's including all of those, but maybe getting some more specific information from people that frequent those areas, whether it's driving or biking or running or, going to school, maybe we can get some more detailed feedback to make better decisions. That's my conclusion.
Mr. Guthrie?
Sure. Well, first I'll echo that I do think we tend to sort of get too caught up in the planning part of this and don't have the ongoing feedback from the public in general to see where they're struggling with whatever they're struggling with, whether it's there's no crosswalk at a certain point. I know recently Robin Michael, this is, there's been a light out at the corner of Fair Oaks and Elm Street for probably a very long time. And I didn't know, and I should, that there's a place to comment on that. And it really just came up in a separate discussion we were having about a crosswalk at that location. So I would echo this. It's really important that we identify, not just in big plans with like this, big safety with a whole bunch of data, that when people tell us they're having a problem somewhere, that we're looking at and really looking directly at that issue. And this is where I'll also echo Commissioner Buchanan's comments about what he's calling a quick build, but which is taking a look at, we have this problem, what's the sort of the most viable product we can produce easily, whether it's just striping that's a great example of it, or whether it's, you know, some other sort of, either it's public information or identifying things. I'll also comment that, you know, it's appropriate this comes up here. We did just have a pretty significant pedestrian accident at Farrell and Halcyon yesterday. A mother was struck right in front of her kids right there going to school. So we definitely have issues around, I think, around all of our schools, but in particular, the one here at Harlow. I'll just add, the reason I asked about the two road segments, Allen Street and Bridge Street, and the concept there of one-way streets or just eliminating the parking, is there's actually some work out there by, I think it's Michael Speck, who wrote Walkable Communities. I may have the first name wrong. He's got a pretty big following, and he suggests that one-way streets are particularly dangerous for pedestrians because they increase auto speeds. And so I'm not sure that what I'll call the regular fix, which is, you know, eliminating parking and doing one-way streets is always the answer. In fact, really controlling speed is the answer, and anything that takes the risk of increasing speed is something we should do, be very carefully. Similar there with Allen Street, even eliminating parking, Chuck Marone with Strong Towns has a pretty good article on that happens to be right in front of his house that I believe has a bicycle path as well, but the cars are driving significantly faster there than they did in the past. So those are the kinds of what I call natural fixes that I think we need to sort of think twice about. And then finally, I just hope we can find a way to actually count bicycles and pedestrians. It's obvious that the village has a lot more pedestrians than probably anywhere else in the city. But for instance, Juniper Street, there's a crosswalk there, Juniper to Fairview. There's actually quite a bit of potential activity there for people to cross, but it's a 110-foot crossing, but you do have shopping opportunities, entertainment opportunities, a whole bunch of things on both sides of the street there as well. So it'd be interesting to see what the actual pedestrian activity is there compared to, say, to Alder, a place that I walk through all the time, and I'll say it's not comfortable. So those are my comments here. I do think that it's important that we get through this process, not just because of the stay, but it's just important that we take a really solid look at not just auto traffic, but pedestrian and bicycle traffic, and where people are struggling to do that. And a lot of people picked up walking here during the COVID period. It's relatively safe, but it's getting less safe already. So thank you.
Excellent. Thank you very much. Ms. Mirabilia, you have comments you'd like to share?
Well, being last, I don't have many original comments that have not been, you know, already mentioned, but I do want to thank staff for all your time and effort put into this process. I appreciate that so many people were asked to be part of it. I think that is, considering what you said, Robin, about Pismo not necessarily doing the same thing, I think it's great that you looked at it so extensively from a lot of different aspects and point of views. I would have liked to see more community involvement, but I appreciate all the work that was put into it, and I wanted to thank you for that.
Very good. Mr. Pedrotti, I think that is about what we can add at this point. I too agree with many, not all, the comments that have been made so far. Whatever
Chair
we
Martin,
can do to help. Yes, Mr. Kassim.
Could I just make a couple comments?
Absolutely.
I'm hearing what you guys have to say about public comment, and I feel it's very, very important. Right now, it's hard because we don't have a lot of base documents sort of in our toolbox as far as what we could look at as quick build. I mean, you guys mentioned things like San Luis and some of the other regions around here where they just seem to be able to build these things very quickly. A lot of it is because they have different things in place. One of the things we're trying to do, the circulation element update provided a lot of stuff that we can look at and has given the city opportunities now to make different decisions than we had before. The original circulation element went back to 2001. So we've updated it, even though we had a trails and bike plan that was done in 2012, it still did not address a lot of the stuff that we have available to us as far as various bike lanes. We now have that with the updated circulation element. The local road safety program is sort of our first step. Our next step is to get into an active transportation plan. We are hoping to file for a grant next week. We've already got a support letter from the city council that happened at the last council meeting. That active transportation plan, I see a major outreach of the public, not only the public in a community type setting, but also to talk to individual group areas so that we can really hear from the people where they're seeing issues, what those issues are, so that we can actually start addressing those. So although we haven't started the active transportation plan, we've started the planning for what we really need to do. And there is going to be an extensive outreach on that active transportation plan. So if we get lucky and we are successful in obtaining a grant, we'll know in April of 2022, and hopefully we can kick off an active transportation plan in the fall of 2022. And at that time, we're going to start setting up some community work groups like we did with the local road safety program, and that we're going to look for in a very extensive public outreach. So that is something that we're hearing. We're in the process of doing that on the Trafficway Bridge right now. There is going to be a community workshop to start making people aware of what's going on with the Trafficway Bridge rehabilitation project. Because there is going to be although it's temporary, a significant change to the way people drive and what roads they're able to use, because the council has already approved a full closure of the Trafficway Bridge area. So we're in the process of setting up a stakeholders group, and then there will be a community outreach meeting on November 18th. So those are things in process right now.
Good to hear. Thank you very, very much. Mr. Pedrotti, any closing comments?
I just want to say thank you for having this on your agenda and going through it and providing us with the input. It's going to be valuable moving forward to go to the city council with it. And as Robin said, we're kind of laying down the building blocks with the LSRP and the SARP, and then hopefully if we can get this ATP grant, it'll be moving forward and getting to implementation of a lot of these improvements.
Very good.
So thank you.
Thank you. Good discussion, good conversation. I learned even more, although I just spent a little bit of time reading into this document. Thank you. The next item we have is item 10, the administrative decisions. There was only one administrative decision that was shared on our agenda. Any comments on that administrative item from the commission?
Just a question for staff. Given that council has wanted to see an accelerated agenda item, are we eliminating or still taking applications for vacation rentals and in-home stays?
That's a great question. We do have the city council has agendized it. Well, they have asked us to come back for some direction. And so we are coming back. I think tentatively right now we're looking at November 9th. And in the meantime, so far we have not altered the approval process as we haven't really been given direction quite yet. They've talked about options, but at this time we're still moving forward with the process as it is. So we're still accepting applications and things like that.
Thank you.
Okay. Nothing else? Any final communications from the commissioners that they would like to share before we close tonight's meeting? Hearing none, seeing none, and then any closing staff communications?
I think that Robin took all of my communications. Trafficway Bridge, that's coming up, and the ATP, and so I have nothing further.
Is there any discussion about going back to live meetings, or are we going to continue with the Zoom
policy for the time being? Yeah, at this time, there hasn't been a discussion about, I mean, we're always sort of keeping it on the forefront, but nothing concrete about when we're coming back in person.
And we're going to depend on City Council to be making that decision.
Right. And I think obviously the numbers seem to be going in the right direction in the county. So I think that it's sort of a wait and see approach at this point, given that we're coming into winter and regular flu season. So I'm sure we'll be having another discussion in the next month or so to see kind of where we can go from there. It would be great to be back in person.
I concur. And with that, this meeting, the Planning Commission is hereby adjourned, 7:37 p.m. Thank you very much, everybody.
Thank you, guys.